This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Will the alarming developments of 2016 become full-scale crises in 2017? I know you're thinking about that. Put aside the cast of characters, though, who have given people reason to worry now. The tweets already about North Korean missiles, Kim Jong-un's saber-rattling, a president-elect at 40% approval rating. There's Syria, ISIS, Putin, the steamrolling Dallas Cowboys. Put them all aside. There are people who have to think hard about and calculate the real big risks of the coming year. And unlike a lot of the election predictions last November that produced more than a few never mind comments from the data freaks and Nate Silvers of the world, there are some views of the future that have to be grounded in plausible truth and actionable scenarios, even given the possibility of out-of-the-blue surprises. Every year, Ian Bremmer, president and founder of the Eurasia Group, releases his top 10 risks for the year ahead. Bremmer focused much of his report last year on America's seemingly inward turn, and America's 2016 surprise has become his top risk for 2017.
I think we can start this by saying that we've entered formally a geopolitical recession because the old world order is done. There's no more Pax Americana. The United States does not want to provide leadership on global security. It wants to shed the burdens both of allies and of multilateralism. It's not a problem for the U.S. domestic market, but for American allies and for the rest of the world, that is a very disconcerting change.
Let me push back on each one of these. On the first one, that independent America is the key risk. But what if we're just returning to a kind of Pax Cold War? That essentially the U.S. and Russia will return to a kind of, well, we can handle our own business here. Multilateralism in the diverse way it was envisioned by Obama is just not sustainable. And it makes more sense to confront China with our good buddies, the Russians.
It's pretty clear that multilateralism as talked up by Obama wasn't sustainable. He set a lot of red lines around the world that the Americans didn't end up following through on. But that's very different from saying we're reverting to a Cold War. And I think the Chinese, first and foremost, see tremendous opportunity in this independent America, because if you really wanted to revert to Cold War, your strategy would be, let's make sure that America's allies in Asia are as aligned with the U.S. as humanly possible on military issues, on trade, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's not the direction we're going.
Because Trump is pushing back on Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's disarray among those allies. And in fact, China, which is your number two risk, overreacting. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the Chinese, while they see opportunity in developing an alternative to the United States, and they'll have a lot of success in doing that economically, they also have a big leadership change coming up in 2017 in the fall. That's five-year party Congress. And in the run-up to that, Xi Jinping's willingness to tolerate either domestic economic problems at home or a fight with Trump going to be very low. And so if Trump's coming in as the new president and saying, we've got a lot more power internationally, we're going to push back on these Chinese engaging in unfair practices on trade and on tax and with Taiwan, well, he's going to get it back very hard from China. This is the absolute time that the Chinese would be more risk acceptant as opposed to risk averse because of their own domestic challenges. There's no question that potential for direct confrontation between the world's two largest economies, by far the most important bilateral relationship in the world, is much more real now. And that does include military confrontation.
Number three on your list, I'll name it Find Germany. You call it a weaker Merkel. What's the fear there?
Well, risks have been significant across the European continent over the last few years. The Eurozone crisis this last year, of course, we had Brexit, we had the failure of the Italian referendum. You're going to see more of that this year, too. But the one thing we've been able to count on consistently since the financial crisis in 2008 was a very strong Angela Merkel, a very strong Germany. So when crises emerge, the Germans are able to lead a response, whether it's from the European Central Bank or whether it's from, you know, more integration of top European leaders. That's not happening. She's up for re-election. She's very likely to win, but with a much weaker coalition. She's going to have to play populism at home to ensure that victory. But she just doesn't have the political capital to lead a European response to the next crises which occur, whether that is Marine Le Pen winning in France or the Italian banks falling apart or Greece with another economic crisis or big terrorism across Europe. 2017 is not going to be easy for Europe, but the resilience that they've had through Merkel, that's just not going to be there.
Is the Trump administration going to push Merkel into making some sort of rapprochement with Russia, or can she stay the course and be somewhat of a solitary figure?
I think she'll be a more solitary figure. You know, Trump would like that, but unlike Prime Minister Abe, who got on a plane to say hi to Trump right after he won, brought him a golf club as a gift, Merkel's response was a statement that said, "Congratulations, Mr. President. We're prepared to continue to work closely with you as long as you uphold the traditional values that have made the U.S.-Germany relationship important." Now, that's not the kind of response that a U.S. president newly elected typically gets from the German ally. And I think Merkel is not going to follow Trump's lead on Putin. She's going to have a very serious problem with that.
You've got three that I'll sort of rope together here. No reform, technology in the Middle East, and central banks get political. It's a complicated, arcane set of topics, but in fact, they all kind of go together. Economic reforms sort of come to an end. Technology is going to be very disruptive throughout the Middle East and elsewhere. And central banks may play a bigger role than even Merkel.
Political leaders are getting weaker in much of the world, and that is a disastrous challenge in the Middle East, where people talk about populism in Europe and the U.S., but at least in those places, the institutions are strong. Populism in the Middle East, driven by technology, taking away the oil wealth, for example, leading to social media that polarizes sectarian and tribal issues, is really making those governments much, much more brittle, making states implode. The end of ISIS in Syria and Iraq is not fixing that problem at all. It's much more structural. This is what gave rise initially to lots of terrorism in that part of the world, where across emerging markets more broadly, a lot of people are saying we need more political reform to make these economies sustainable, but you don't have strong enough leadership to make that happen. There are very few pockets of the world in 2017 where you have leaders that are strong enough to actually think long term in sustainable policy.
The big 2016 photo op at the end of the year before the holidays was Donald Trump hanging out with all those Silicon Valley leaders at Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan. You say number seven is the White House versus Silicon Valley. Aren't they on the same page? You don't believe it?
No, and they didn't believe it when they showed up. It was an interesting meeting, clearly driving, you know, more of the U.S. economic resurgence than any other sector, but also fundamentally opposed to Trump in key ways. One is their control, their ownership of the new media, which Trump knows he needs to own that space in order to continue to appeal to his base more broadly. And so that's going to be a fight. And then also you have Trump much more focused on national security, terrorism. It's going to roll back some of the regulations that stop the U.S. government from a lot of mass collection of data. Silicon Valley, much more libertarian in orientation. California, of course, is the one place that truly voted strongly against Trump. They're going to have a big fight this year. And I think you're going to actually see that fight being pretty meaningful this year.
I always advocate for Turkey to be higher on your list. You've got it number eight here, and North Korea is number nine. North Korea always safe on a risk assessment list, that's for sure. But South Africa, curiously, is it stalled in its transition, its political transition, and will that be a hugely destabilizing force?
It's probably a little worse than stalled in the sense that President Zuma is not going to tolerate a transition to a more popular, more capable figure, but instead probably going to try to squeeze his wife in. I mean, South Africa is the most important regional hegemon in Africa, has helped to stabilize countries around it. Again, just not available this year in any way to play that role.
I would say, you always put red herrings on your list, I would say Venezuela and Brazil. What are your red herrings?
Brazil, definitely. Venezuela, I mean, because they're suffering just so much, it's hard to say
terrible.
It can be a more stable story, maybe, but it's hard to imagine it's a red herring. Brazil, definitely. It's hard for me to imagine that this president gets impeached because there's no road after that. And so despite the scandals, this isn't a bad year for Brazil. But another one I focused on is the U.S. domestically, the U.S. at home. With the Republican House and Congress, there are a lot of things that can get done that were functionally stalled under Obama. I think most specifically about spending money on infrastructure, but I also think about a corporate tax bill. I think about regulations becoming more rationalized. There are a lot of things that are going to be very political happening in the United States that some will like and some will hate. But from an economic growth perspective, 2017 under Trump actually looks okay.
So, Mr. Planner, Mr. Thinking Ahead, did the aliens land in 2017?
I make some
headlines here.
I'll tell you, the thing that worries me the most is that in the last 20 years, I would say the likelihood of major military confrontation among the world's serious economies was functionally zero. And I think we can't say that anymore. It's not high. But I can give you scenarios where the U.S. and China, U.S. and Iran, Iran and Saudi Arabia, conceivably even the U.S. and Russia, depending on how sustainable the rapprochement is, end up at blows. And while I don't think that's global nuclear, you know, annihilation, I do think it would lead to an economic depression. And so I think that the geopolitics, which have been, you know, interesting and very troublesome in certain parts of the world, we now enter a geopolitical recession is real. And the potential for that to become very dangerous for us is probably the single top issue over the coming few years. And that's not something I'm used to discussing.
The top 10 risks for 2017 from the Eurasia Group. Ian Bremmer is president and founder of the Eurasia Group. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.